for those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is The God Journey. Well, according to the calendar, it's 2014, and this is a new year of The God Journey, but none of that seems to make much sense in my journey. It rarely does. I don't know that I have any greater clarity today than I did 8 days ago when it was still 2013. We come to the end of the year, and you know what? I just keep living on. I just keep living as much as I can in the moment, trying to find out where this journey of life and faith and transformation and God touch in my life takes me, and enjoying it to the full. So having a ball. I'll be honest with you, I've missed you. And I know that sounds funny when I'm sitting here in a room by myself podcasting, but every podcast I do somehow starts a conversation around it. Some of it may be on the blog, some of it's by email or phone call or whatever. Initiate some conversation about life and grace, and I get to be part of that changing moment in people's lives. And I enjoy that, even though I'm alone when it starts off. But I tell you, I've missed it as much as I've needed the quiet of the last few weeks, and I have. There are seasons when you just can't always be in the conversation and needed to take some time away with family, need to take some time to get this silly book done, and I am making progress on it, but unfortunately not as much as I had hoped. I had hoped to pretty much rough it out by the end of the year, but haven't gotten that far. And I'm about 13, 14 chapters in, and I'm liking the way it's shaping up, but it's rougher than I'd like it, and it's going to take me a little more time, but I may even share another chapter on the podcast here coming up in a couple of weeks, but I've got some other things I want to do first, so we'll tackle them. But I've missed you, and one of the things we said we'd talk about when the year starts, and I've been kind of thinking about getting a podcast on this, and every time I do, I'm kind of reach a block, so I'm going to need some help from you. We've gotten a number of emails, blog comments from people in the last few months talking about how lonely this journey makes them. Somehow they've ended up apart maybe from friends. I don't even know. And I guess that's where I'm stuck. I don't know what loneliness means. I don't know if it means I don't have any friends at all. I don't have any friends that have this conversation about life and grace. And I'd like to tackle it. I'd love to tackle it through some of your eyes and some of your heart. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I've been lonely one day of my life other than maybe the first week or two I was in college. And you get that kind of homesick, I don't know anybody here, all my friends and family's back there. And there was a period, there was more homesickness maybe than loneliness, but I've always had people around my life that I enjoy being with and that I can call up and, hey, let's get together and have a conversation. So I don't know what it means when people say, and I don't know the emotions of loneliness. I get that people end up in lonely places. I get that some people are not as talkative as I am at times and able to engage conversations even with strangers. I get that. But I want to help process that because I don't think Jesus invited us away from the system of religious obligation to leave us lonely. We might go through a stretch of being alone, but you know, there's an aloneness that leads to solitude that's pretty cool, and there's an aloneness that makes me feel lonely, and that's not helpful. And so I'm not sure that it's more than internal. So I just want to open it up. If you want to have that dialogue on it, send me an email. I can't believe I'm asking for that. Send me an email, comment on this blog for this particular one, and I'll get those, and we'll see if we can put together some ideas to explore. And if you've been through a season of loneliness, and God's kind of begun to answer some of that, open new doors, how is that happening for you and what's happening in your life? So maybe that'll get us into a conversation. I hope it does, because I tell you, there's nothing my heart goes out to more than people who feel lonely, who just feel that their obedience to Christ has led them to an isolated space. God's a God of community. He's invited us into community. I'm a champion for, you know, collaboration and conversation that's alive and stimulating. And to think that people end up in a place, and it could be seasonal, but if it goes on for a long, long time, my heart goes out to you. I'd love to explore it together. I want to, though, hear more from you, what it is. What do you mean by loneliness? And what some of you have been through it. What do you hear God saying? And we could bring some of that together in a podcast up the road, maybe a couple of weeks from now, and see where we end up. How about that? Now, I'm going to read a letter to you. Actually, this will be the most quickly answered email we've ever had at The God Journey, because this email, I literally got it half an hour before I started recording this podcast. And I thought, you know, I would like to talk about this. And so I'm jumping right on. This is from Leon in South Africa. And he said, hope you've had a great season. I was re-listening to some of the recent podcasts, especially John Anderson, Joni Menard, and Daryl Luthes, among some others. I have a question. I have no idea how to read together with my wife. I've heard you often say, Sarah and I are reading. I've always read and prayed alone. And now that I'm married, it's strange to let someone into that space. So I'm assuming he's freshly married and perhaps very young, particularly by the comment he makes in a minute. So he says, so perhaps you could share some pointers on how you guys do it. As I purposely stayed away from those verses that say a man must speak the word over his wife, because that could only lead me to being a drill sergeant. And that, of course, gets us nowhere. So perhaps some pointers from an older couple. That's what makes me think they might be younger. So do you read a book individually, together? What about the Bible? Yeah, let me jump into this a little bit, because I have said a lot. In the last year and a half, since Sarah and I went through the time we went through about a year and a half ago that we've shared on this podcast in the past, reading has become much more of our life together, reading together. I really discovered Sarah enjoys me reading to her. Now, she doesn't read to me, and she doesn't want to, so I don't ask her to. And I would get bored if she tried. I get bored listening to audiobooks. I've tried it in the car when I'm driving around, and I just don't stay engaged with somebody reading to me. My mind wants to go faster than that. But I find I can read to someone else, and I found that Sarah and I have kind of stumbled into this. We have done it, Leon, in times past because, you know, as a couple, we're supposed to, and so we try to have a devotional, and we try to read something, and It's always ended up becoming the rote thing we're supposed to do instead of something that fed and nurtured us. And I really think that's what religion does to us. It kind of creates a lot of these kinds of things. Things we're supposed to do because they're good for us, including going to a bunch of meetings, that we don't necessarily benefit from. And I don't mean just it's fun for us in a fleshy way. I just mean we benefit from it spiritually. But somehow we're just supposed to keep doing it because it's the right thing to do. And Sarah and I gave that up quite a while ago. We have had different seasons where a book has both interest us, so we've read it together. We have done some times where we've read devotionals or Bible reading together just because it would get us into a conversation. And then we've gone through seasons where we couldn't find a book where that was fun at all. And so we didn't do it at all. We don't do it because we have to. What Sarah and I have spilled into now at this part of our journey, and I actually thought of the scripture you referenced about the washing of the word, which Paul refers to in Ephesians 5 about the husband's words. And it's interesting when the sociologists talk and tell us that, you know, women use 5,000 words a day and guys use about 200. And how much I know women appreciate conversations with their guys, not boss man conversations telling everybody what they need to be doing, but the real conversations of life, and how much relationally opening our lives to somebody is such a value and a benefit to them that I've thought about that a lot as I've been reading, and I've been watching those words wash over Sarah. Just the fact that I'm talking to her now, we're coming up on 39 years of marriage. So I think you can let these things sort out. I don't know if I give any pointers except say if you find something interesting and a way to do it that's interesting to both of you, then do it. Don't do it because you feel like you should. I don't think we're a better marriage. I always tire of people who later in life find their way into some new area of freedom, and then everybody else should be doing it too. And I've seen that with a couple of guys who, you know, live, you know, 40 years ridiculously overweight and then suddenly get on a I'm going to lose a weight binge, and then they're going to drag their whole church along with them. Everybody's going to come. We're all going to do this together. And then, you know, it lasts for about 3 or 4 years, and then they're back to their old weight again. And even if they don't get back to their old weight, just to drag people along on what God's changing in you is not important. Sarah and I are reading a lot together. I'm loving it. We're reading the Bible pretty much every day together, and we're just reading a chapter of something. And we get done with a book, and we'll say, you know, where do you want to read next? What sounds interesting to us? And we'll, you know, whether you want to read in the Gospels or read Acts or read the letters, or even right now working through some Old Testament history, actually in Numbers as we speak. But we skip huge sections of Numbers. And we pass it, okay, more Levitical law. laws, more offerings, more, and I'm flipping pages. And then we'll get to a story about Miriam and Aaron, or a story about Moses and this humility before God. And then, boy, we're into that, and we're reading it, and we're talking about it together. We're also just reading a fun book together. It's just a novel. We're reading a novel because we're both interested in the story. And because I've enjoyed being able to read, and then after we read, there's usually that moment of lingering where conversations come up that wouldn't come up if we just kept crashing through life together. So I just say find something that's fun for you to do, and when it's fun, do it. And when it's not fun or helpful, don't do it as a matter of routine or supposed to, because I don't think what Paul was talking about in Ephesians 5 is everybody should read to their spouse. And it may be another marriage that the spouse, the wife has more fun reading and the guy has more fun listening. So it's not even a guy has to do it kind of thing. I think the Ephesians 5 thing is talk more to your wife than you're naturally inclined to as a man. I think that's probably an encouragement from Paul, and realizing you do it because it really blesses her. And if it doesn't bless her, then don't do it, because the point was to bless her, not to, preach her a sermon every other day and drive her insane because whatever. So, yeah, we are reading a lot more. We are enjoying it. We've just found our way into something that works. We've spent 39 years trying to find it and only have found it more recently. So don't rush it. Don't hurry it. Don't feel like you have to. Find something fun to do together. So what does it sound great? What leads you into conversation? We started this for us. Sarah and I read The Gifts of Imperfection together because it was part of Sarah's story, and it was a book by Brené Brown, and I wanted to engage what was in there myself. So we just worked through it, and then we got done with that. I was like, what's next? And let's find something else. And we did Daring Greatly. Most of that got a little, it was a little bit repetitive. And then we've done some other devotional stuff, and but we've gotten into some stuff that just got boring and it didn't lead to conversation, so we jettisoned it and we kind of waited for something else to appear. So I think you can find yourself into that in a real way. And this from Leslie. Also got this today. It's a pretty quick answer too. I was able to sit down recently, listen to a few older podcasts, Free Range Kids and the one where you read the first chapter of your book you're working on. Thank you for sharing these thoughts. I'm excited about the new book you're working on, and love and how you talk about the institutions as churches built with hands. Which I'm not sure I exactly said it that way, but I get her point. What a great way of wording it. The podcast with your daughter, Julie, was especially encouraging to me as a mother of three. I had been struggling recently with guilt after being around my religious family for the holidays of not teaching my kids enough about God or doing devotions or whatever shoulds were lying to my soul. I love the way she says that. The shoulds that were lying to my soul. I love that. So hearing your conversation with Julie was quite freeing and reminded me once again that our God journey is not about shoulds, but about loving and being loved. What a freedom. And it is. And I want to share this with you because I'm going to get another letter that kind of takes me to that same space. But this is the growing edge of my life right now. And I don't even know where this is going to go, but I'm having fun exploring it. A few weeks ago, I was recording the second to the last Engage, which was actually the last one I recorded. I did it while I was pruning a grapevine in my yard, and I talked about God's training of us and what most people have thought the Hebrews 12 scripture, God chastising or punishing us or disciplining us, is always about punishment. Because it's weird the way the Western mind works. Discipline is punishment. To get you to do what you need to do, I need to get something worse over here for you that will make doing what you should be doing more pleasurable than not doing it. I mean, and that's, unfortunately, it's how we mostly raise kids, is that discipline equals punishment. It's interesting in our culture, we also think that justice equals punishment. You've wronged me, and when I can wrong you back enough, then we'll have justice. And I don't think justice is about punishment at all. Justice is about restoration. It's about life. It's about healing. The cross, and that maybe that's why we corrupted the cross to make it about punishment, because that's what we understand, punishment. We did something bad. God has to do something worse. Thank God he did it to himself and doesn't have to do it to us. And the weird way we got into all the cross stuff, which I've talked extensively about, kind of rides on the same thing. But as I was praying the grapevine on this Engage video, and we'll link it here in case you haven't seen it and want to see it. As I was pruning the grapevine and referring to one of my favorite passages to live this journey, I find myself often going back. And even as Sarah and I read sometimes, we'll go, if we don't want nothing else, let's go to John 13, 14, 15, 16. Maybe read it in really small bits, not a chapter a day, because then that just more things than we'll talk about, but maybe a paragraph or two, or at least until a discussion begins. But I was reading that, and one of the theme verses, I think, or one of the things that puts together so much of what God is saying, what Jesus is saying to his disciples, is, I am telling you these things. Now, that seems to be a pretty overriding theme. I'm telling you these things for this reason, that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. Now, that's just a great statement. And as I was sharing that and then talking about discipline and talking about I'm not punishing a vine when I train it. I'm disciplining it. Yeah, I'm cutting things off that are hurtful or not going to be advantageous to the vine's fruitfulness. But more importantly, as I tie those vines to a wire, as I wrap them around a wire, there's some stresses and strain on that vine. It doesn't enjoy the discipline it takes to be fruitful. It doesn't enjoy it. But if I don't do it, if I don't prune it, it's not going to bear fruit. If I prune it but don't tie the vines to the wire, then it will bear fruit, but the fruit will damage the vine, because as the grape bunches ripen and get heavy, they'll rip the branch right off the vine. And so it's got to be supported by this wire that I wrap it around. And yeah, the stresses, you can hear the vine, particularly the brittle canes of wintertime, you can hear them creak and crack. And if you go too fast, you can break the cane right there. But if you go gentle and get it wrapped around there. And I said, why does God discipline us? And then when I said this, so that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. This is one of those moments when I learn something while I'm talking. I said that and it hit a place in my heart deeper than just normally sharing stuff. And it kind of took me in a different space. Really, since that time, that's been probably 3.5-4 weeks ago, and I haven't taken my mind off of that yet. I'm still on this. Wow, everything God has for me, the training, the loving, we think the transformation, I guess my bias, and I guess there's something way down deep in my soul that God gets to work on right now, but religion embedded deeply in me the idea, unconscious, that Wayne is virtually a despicable creature to God. And so God wants to save me, transform me, make me a better person for him so that he can tolerate it better, so he could be with me more. And that really the whole idea of God at work in my life is he's trying to clean me up and make me acceptable. And we already know that we're made acceptable through the cross. So, I know theologically that's not great space to be in. I'm just talking about the way the soul thinks beneath the surface of things. And the whole idea of that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full, what it began to open up in me is maybe not every desire I have is fleshy. Not every desire I have is wrong. When my kids come over, my grandkids now, and they come over to Grandpa's house, what if I met them at the door with a complete list of, okay, here's what I don't want you doing because it just bugs me. And we're going to play these things because this makes Grandpa happy. Man, how much are my grandkids going to enjoy coming over to my house? If it's all about me and you being good enough for me, and I don't like doing the things you want to do, it's stupid that you want to play with these little cars, or it's stupid that you want to play this little game of chase Grandpa around the house. I'm not doing that because it's just weird. You need to grow up and act right, and we'll have more fun doing that. And then and no one has any fun at all. God created us with the most incredible desires inside that only he will fulfill. And so when Jesus is tapping into our heart and he's saying, why am I telling you these things about living in me, about being pruned on the vine and being pruned up? Why am I telling you these things? Because I want my joy to be in you and I want your joy to be full. I want these two things to come together. My delight in you, not my holding you as despicable and hoping to clean you up enough that I can tolerate you. I want my delight in you to come together with what delights your heart. And that there are things that you want that are godly wants. I guess I was taught to be suspicious of almost all my wants are indulgent, selfish thoughts that I must take up my cross, deny myself, and follow him. Now, there are moments that you lay down your life. I think those are moments God invites us into. I don't think the whole of Jesus' life is, maybe difficult as it was to give up his space as deity and live among us with the limitations of humanity. Maybe that was difficult for him in a daily way. I don't get the sense from what we read in the Gospels that he was miserable. And, oh, it was a difficult obedience. And, oh, it was very hard to be with you guys. I think he reveled in time with his disciples and his friends, with Mary and Martha. He even seemed to have a lot of fun with people who weren't on the God page, who were, you know, sinners, as the Pharisees called them, or at least people who, you know, were into some spurious sexual things and whatever. And he was able to love them. He was able to be with them in a way that scandalized the more religious people who were concerned about how you can be with those people and claim to have any sense of godliness. I think Jesus enjoyed his time here. Oh, he didn't enjoy maybe the last 24 hours leading up to the cross. I think there's moments when we lay our lives down. There's a moment when God invites you to do something that kind of means you've got to give up something. And until you learn that, I don't think you know what really joy is, because that's a big piece of joy. But now I think what sin is not, here's what you shouldn't be doing because it makes God mad. I think what sin is in this scenario of my joy in you, your joy full. Here's what sin is. Sin is your counterfeit desires. Sin is the thing you think you want because it makes you happy in the moment, but in the long term, it'll eat you out from the inside and it'll destroy you. And so God identifies things as sin, not because he's interested in us getting everything right so he'll be happy. I think what he's saying is, I want to tap in you the deepest joy in your life. And living in right relatedness to him and living in right relatedness to the world around you and not trespassing on each other's rights and not violating each other and not being indulgent at someone else's expense. I mean, all the things that God invites us into as areas of righteousness are just joyful way to live, joyful ways to live. I got this letter from Brent, and I think it just fed into this too, and I didn't get this too long ago either, so it seems to be time for this week anyway. Brent said this: I just had a podcast idea for you, and I think I got this a couple days ago. If you're interested, I think I said idea. I have an idea for you. I'm not that New Englandish. I'd be interested to hear you talk about obeying or obedience. That is, I hear some people who really focus on, we just have to obey, whether we want to or not. These are the things we need to be doing, the obligations we need to follow. I think the word obedience, obeying, has the implication that we're doing isn't what we want to be doing. I think it misses the point. God wants to transform us in such a way that we're doing, how we're living really is what we want to be. God transforms our thoughts, motives, priorities. And I used to say this language too. God transforms our thoughts. I'm not sure he does. I think God tags the deeper ones. Yeah, we've all got indulgent kinds of thoughts that are just about immediate gratification at someone else's expense, or maybe not even at someone else's expense. But nonetheless, we have these desires and indulge them to be happy for the moment, but they lead to this long-term frustration because they really don't fulfill the deeper cry of the heart. So I'm not sure he transforms all our thoughts and motives. I think he taps our deeper ones. He taps them in such a way that obedience is not a chore. Going back to Brent's letter, if living in God's way is a chore for us, we need God to adjust some things in us. I think the other concerning aspect of obedience is that such an elementary understanding of a relationship. That is, as parents of young children, we just tell them what to do and expect rote obedience because we told them so. But as a child matures to adulthood, one hopes they can understand the concepts / principles / values that underlie what they were told as a child. I think God wants us to incorporate or assimilate his ways into our own ways, where they were no longer doing something out of a strong backbone of obeying no matter what. It becomes part of the fabric of who we are, like when Jesus said, I no longer call you slaves. Brent, I love where you're headed with this. I think it's exactly fits into what I was sharing earlier about my joy in you and your joy full. if your obedience to Christ, even the difficult things he might ask you to do, if there's not some joy in them, and by joy we don't mean happy. Not everything is happy. Joy is a deeper sense of well-being that really is detached from our circumstance. It can be as real in moments of pain as it can be in circumstances of great bliss. Joy is the deeper part of who I am, connecting with who he is. And I think what Hebrews 3 and 4 is trying to underline, the same thing for us. Those that don't enter the Sabbath rest don't do so because of disobedience and because of unbelief. The root is not, and I know when people make this whole God thing about obedience or disobedience, I really think that's what religion does. Religion twists everything to, you're a creep, so do what you hate, and God will honor that. Instead of, you are deeply loved, but you know what? You are doing some things that's destructive to you and people around you. And you do those things because you don't know that you're loved, and you don't know that this Father will take care of you. So you're acting out of your own wisdom and desires and indulgences, and those will lead you to destruction. Listen, God knows who you are. He loves you. He delights in you. And he wants to invite you into a relationship with him that taps the deepest hungers of your heart. And when those two things come together, it's like the phrase in the movie Chariots of Fire about this guy running and how much he senses the pleasure of God in his running. I can't imagine that. There's no exercise I've ever done where I've sensed the pleasure of God. But there are other things I do, and I don't mean necessarily all spiritual things either. I think God put us on the planet in part to enjoy him and the beauty of his creation and things that are just fun to do. I love playing with my grandkids. I love it. I love a long conversation with my son or daughter. I love sitting with Sarah at night on the patio when it's a little warmer outside and reading together and having those conversations. There's so much that I enjoy about life. And I think God delights. I want my kids to come over, my grandkids. I want them to enjoy time at grandma's and grandpa's. I'm finding my way into stuff that they want. The idea that everything we want is wrong or selfish, and I think this even plays into how we're going to explore community. Because I think when God's connecting people on this journey and they're going to walk alongside, I think there's a knowing, there's a connection, there's an enjoyment of each other that kind of allows me to pursue certain relationships that I may not pursue certain others. And we've always said, well, you know, I'll be honest, when I was a pastor and we're trying to put people in home groups, it's, you know, go to the group in your area. Even if you don't like the people there, God's going to shape some wonderful things in your heart. And that just played out in so many ways. Whatever you want is wrong. So do the worst thing you can do and that will be godly. And some people even get their kicks from that. You know, they'll pat on the back. My life's miserable. I'm just doing what God asks, and I'm just miserable. And boy, when you're miserable, you'll export that all over other people. What if the very thing you want to do is the very thing God wants you to be a part of? What if what brings wonder and delight to your heart that's not destructive and hurtful to others brings delight to his? What if God only identified things as sin, not so we'd have to stop doing the bad stuff and do the good stuff, but because he wanted to identify the imposter desires that sin twisted in us so that in learning to live free of those, by embracing a greater love, then his joy would be in us and that our joy might be full? I'm kind of living on that page. I'm exploring what that's about right now and really seeing that some of the things, I mean, I'm having a ball writing this book that I'm still working on. It's a lot of work. There are not all moments of it that are fun. There are days I'm sitting here with 15 different thoughts trying to work them into a chapter and it's not fitting in and I just got to keep pounding away at it until it happens. But overall, I enjoy the challenge of trying to get something out of my heart and put it on paper in a way that will encourage others on this journey. I mean, I enjoy that process. I enjoy the conversations I get to have with people. I'm not in too many. See, and my involvement with a demanding congregational where everybody had responsibilities and obligations, it often put me with people I didn't enjoy being with. Now, does that make me a bad person? Or maybe God doesn't give us a connection? Or maybe they're just so creepy that they're exploiting or using me in a way that I don't really need to be. It's like kids on a playground. You find one kid that's selfish and shoves people and bullies them around, they'll get marginal. Kids don't hang out with people that aren't fun to hang out with. Now, I know people are going to say, well, no, so you're just going to hang out with neat people. No, Sarah and I, come look at the friendships we have. There are people that we love deeply who are broken, and our hope, our love for them brings them out of that place of brokenness into greater light and freedom. In fact, that's why we hang out with them. And we don't do it for us. We don't do it because, you know, straighten up so we'll feel better. It's for them. Man, you're such a dark, broken place. And we don't say that to them. We just keep loving them and keep talking about what God might want to do in their lives. And when they ask us questions, we probe those areas. And we've watched so many people come to life through that we enjoy that process. So, no, it isn't just go find fun people who like what I like. It's but knowing that when God has a connection for me, I might want that connection. It might not be, no, I got to be those people and they're just horrible to be with. It's that I enjoy being with them, and I enjoy being with them where they are in the relationship and watching as God invites them and me into bigger space. That my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. Man, I think that has opened up a door into my heart, not only to see more clearly how God engages me in the context of the things that I desire that are wonderful, the desires that He put in my heart before I was born, and now tapping those so that I can live in that kind of freedom. And whatever else is going on, even the more painful bits, because now I'm part of a bigger journey than my own amusement, my own indulgence. I'm part of the kingdom of God unfolding in the earth, God establishing His authority in my life and the circumstances that I'm a part of, not God establishing His authority so that we'll do what makes Him happy. God's authority fulfills everything for which God created us. It will tap the most wonderful desires of your heart. It's not something that we have to do to somehow keep God happy. That my joy might be in you, and that your joy might be full. You know, everything that I sense God inviting me into these days, whether it's greater transformation, whether it's something He's inviting me to do, whether it's getting through a difficult moment, I hear this phrase in the back of my mind now, that my joy might be in you, and that your joy might be full. And that has stirred my heart in a fresh way. Wow. So this is about joy. This is not about obligation. It's not about doing what's difficult. It's about joy and purpose and the fullness of God coming in the world. And I tell you what, I don't know where all that's going to lead, but I'm as excited about this. I just feel like this has opened a fresh little doorway in my heart. I probably haven't even explained it well, but I'm kind of excited to see where this goes and what kind of different doors of freedom that it opens up in my life. So we're going to come back in a couple of weeks and talk about this, loneliness and how it impacts our lives. And if you've got some time and you've got an experience, or maybe just describe very well what you mean by loneliness and where it really hurts right now, and or you've been through that and God's led you through a greater space, I just think there's nothing that touches my heart more deeply than people who feel like they go on a more relational journey with God and yet end up with this horrible pain of loneliness. I mean, we can be alone and not lonely. We can find life inside of God, but God made us for community. And if we have to live without it for a while, either because God's inviting us to a deeper space or just because it's not accessible to where we are, God can be bigger than that. He can. So let's explore that. So people don't feel so lost alone. And if you want to jump in on that, you can write me an email. You can post on the blog if you want to. Don't need your name. Just need some things we could interact with. And if God's taking you a greater space there, kind of help us see what shifted in your heart to allow yourself to find the freedom that's there. I don't know if calendar dates are important to you. If they are, I hope you have a wonderful 2014. I hope it leads you into greater space that God has his way in you. And I hope for all of us, we really find ourselves living joy-filled lives in whatever circumstance that we're part of, because something larger than our own amusement has captured our hearts.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.